Hello, everybody, and welcome to the spoiler review for episode 5 of The Last of Us. What an episode. Endure and survive. I finished it earlier today, and I am absolutely still processing a lot of it, wrecked from it 100% from top to bottom. What a fantastic episode of television. And someone tweeted out in response to my tweet about it a couple hours ago, there hasn't been a bad episode yet, and they are 100% right. There really hasn't been, from the opening episode all the way down to this fifth one. It's been a fantastic run of episodes. I think we're all just kind of waiting for the shoe to drop to have that bad episode because it's so good so far. How can it possibly maintain this level of quality consistently from week to week? Yet they somehow find a way to do that. And this episode is yet further evidence of their abilities as Neil Druckmann and Craig Mazin, that is, as the show creators, as the writers, as the people really steering the ship creatively about where they want this series to go and how they want to connect it up or at least honor the spirit of the game and have scenes from the game that are very similar to the game, as we saw at the end of this episode, but have their own signature in live action, have their own style in live action. I actually rewatched the cut scene from the end of this episode that's in the game to compare the two, and there's much more emotional resonance in the live action version versus the video game version, which is much quicker. This one has a little more weight to it, and certainly that kind of struck me as I was watching it. You know, this episode, just overall, by the way, thanks to everybody who's watching me right now, live, 33 of you hanging out. Thank you so much. Please make sure you hit a like on this video. And if you haven't subscribed to the channel, subscribe to the channel down below and hit that bell button. You know, occasionally we'll do some live reviews because I just like to get together with you all and hang out and shoot the shit. And I know other people tell me, dude, just do the 10-minute, 15-minute review. And usually I try to do that, but sometimes certain episodes make me want to hang out with everybody and hear their thoughts about that. And maybe I provide a place for you all to come and like vent a little bit, or, you know, kind of let it all out, the emotion of this episode, because certainly by the end, I was emotional like I was at the end of episode 3, just really kind of emotional for different reasons. I have a bit of a fractured relationship with my own brother. So seeing that come out in this episode, how much love he has for his brother, Henry for Sam, it just kind of hit me on so many levels as well. Plus, I'm an older guy, so those kinds of things, those kinds of relationships kind of resonate a little deeper for you as you get older. Trust me, I'm not trying to be the old man in the room, but that is actually what happens. More of your emotions come out. You're much less judgmental. Yeah, you become more crotchety, but the emotional stuff is really what carries weight with you as you get older. You know, if you have any ability to feel those kinds of things, for sure. And we see that come through here. The episode is also fantastic. I mean, let's just go overall, just what a great episode of television from top to bottom because of how they constructed this episode, starting out back at the beginnings, or the but we're seeing the end of the military rule of Kansas City there, and seeing the residents launch an uprising, and seeing some very brutal, violent modes of revenge being enacted. And I, for one, who love vengeance movies, love revenge movies, and at times entertain the notions of vengeance, seeing it portrayed in such an honestly brutal way, I thought was very unsettling. It made me take a step back and make me wonder, my God, why are they doing this? I mean, we saw people with their hands tied behind their backs, defenseless, being absolutely beat with bats or sticks or steel pipes. We saw people getting kicked on the ground. We saw probably some unsavory shit happening to some of the women. We saw a guy getting lynched, in essence, or hung there. And so just so much of the opening of this already just showing us a explosion of anger that comes from people being subjugated, people being pushed down. And remember later in the episode, when the infected burst out of the ground, we hear how the military, and with the consent of the citizens, essentially shoved the infected down underground and kept them under their foot and never let them out. And they explode out to kill, you know, almost all the hunters there, probably all the hunters there. So it's a mirror of what happens, how we keep repeating these patterns in our lives. And it's a bit of an indictment on the human desire to push stuff away or not look at something or hide it away or keep it down under your foot because you're afraid of its power. You know, there's so many levels to that, so many systemic levels to that. And I think is fascinating. And like any great horror, any great sci-fi, it works on the surface level, just overall, it works on the plain surface level. But if you go deeper, you can see the symbolism that applies to our world and our society and our history, not in just in this country, but globally for centuries in the world, you know, how they've subjugated people and stepped on people that they thought were inferior or infected or lesser than, or, you know, because people of color, black people have been called infestations in the world. You know, women have been called infestations of the men's mind. So we see all those kinds of things, and it's still conversations that are happening nowadays, unfortunately. You know, we see that play out in so many different ways in our society. So seeing it played out a little more generally in this episode, I thought was a great way to kind of make a comment for anyone who wants to catch it about how we act towards the people we find lesser than or infected, or even what we see now with the homeless, right? A lot of people want to shove the homeless into a shelter or shove it away. I don't want to see it, you know, instead of dealing with the actual problem, instead of trying to treat the problem, trying to fix the problem. So you've seen that all play out here in this episode, I thought was really powerful right off the bat. So just kind of confronting the idea of, do you feel sympathy for the hunters who are doing this terrible stuff here? And then we see Kathleen walk in and have the conversation with the people who are huddled in the jail cell or in the cell there. And that is pretty harrowing to watch as well. Her contempt for them that she's just barely keeping in check. And then the casual cruelty of her just talking about, well, we're just, you know, do you guys feel good about yourselves, the things that you did? And, you know, just for medicine or to live or even just for fucking apples, do you feel good about yourselves? And she wants the information about Henry, gets the information, eventually walks out and then tells Perry to kill it. They're not going to get fair trials, even though they lied to them. So in essence, becoming the thing that they beheld, they have become as worse as the military rule that they overthrew, because in their minds, they think that, you know, that these people deserve this kind of thing. And this is the way to stomp out any kind of rebellion. The military rule was constructed in order to stomp out any rebellion, to keep things moving on time, to have nobody contradict anything and let everybody go. Both systems are wrong. Both systems certainly lead to revolution or lead to uprisings. And we see that here, certainly. And so we see the casual cruelty of Kathleen and the glimpse of that here when she's like, they're not getting fair trial. So she lies to them, in essence, and then they're going to kill him and set him on fire. We hear the screams as Perry and his crew walk back into the cell. So just heartbreaking. And again, look at the real world connections, right? People huddled in the cell. What do we see on the border for the last few years is seeing, through multiple administrations, by the way, seeing people of color in cages, seeing Latinos in cages, Hispanic people in cages, out of fear of what's going to happen to them by this government and the decisions that this government wants to make about their desires to live and breathe and exist and want to be a part of the society. Now, the people in the cell, of course, in this show, you could argue, we don't see the particulars of the things that they did, but certainly in Kathleen's mind and probably a lot of the hunters' minds, they were the people who were joyfully committing these crimes crimes against them in their minds in order to survive. So it's just very interesting, these things. It's all a matter of perspective here, and I think that's what's so fascinating about this show. It works so well on the surface level, and then levels deep, it's absolutely functioning as a show as we go along. But let's focus on Kathleen a little bit. Let's go through the whole episode with her, and then we'll move to Henry and Sam, and then Joel and Ellie, of course, and we'll get to that bloater for sure. The idea of Kathleen here, we're seeing her progression in the episode. She certainly wants Henry. She is driven to find Henry. Last episode, she tried to hang the deaths that Joel and Ellie did of her people on Henry. She's completely trying to trick and manipulate and brainwash her people to be against Henry. So she's obsessed with finding Henry. We see her go through the episode. You know, she ends up at the in her old room, looking at the old bunk bed that she shared with Michael. We find out her brother's name was Michael, and that she loved Michael and she cared for Michael. And Michael was the better of the two of them. Michael always protected her. Michael always made her see the better in things and kept her safe, kind of like what Henry is doing for Sam, you know, with Sam being deaf and maybe not having the same access to things that other people might have, dealing with leukemia. So there's a lot that Henry is doing for Sam. But here's Kathleen talking about how Michael took care of her, how Michael was there and helped her through the night and helped her through the scary moments of her life. And so, and then we find out, which was the big reveal, is that Michael told Kathleen the last time she visited him in prison to forgive Henry turning Michael in. And clearly they both knew, because Kathleen alludes to it later on, which we'll get to, that she knew why Henry did what he did. She knew about Sam's leukemia. She knew that Henry sacrificed Michael for Sam, and Michael knew. And that's why Michael told Kathleen, who we hear throughout the whole episode, how Michael is this great person, this magnanimous human being, was so good to everybody. We hear that even in this final moments with Kathleen, he is telling her to be better by forgiving Henry and understanding that this is the way it was supposed to go down. But of course, Kathleen doesn't want to accept that and says to Perry, there's no justice in that. There's no accomplishment in that, right? And so we see a much more multifaceted character who understands good versus right, or good versus evil rather, understands which way to go, wrong versus right, and chooses the path that she thinks is best because she's driven to satisfy her need for vengeance, to satiate her need for vengeance. And we see where that leads, you know, and what that brings about here as she goes along in this episode. And Perry tells her to kind of like calm her down, because maybe she's thinking that Perry's not doing a good enough job, or that Perry's come in the room to convince her that Michael would never do this. Perry's like, shit wouldn't have gotten done without you. You got stuff done, which is, of course, the worst thing you can tell to a burgeoning, worst thing you can say to a burgeoning megalomaniac is that your way of doing things actually got the job done quicker. It doesn't mean that it got it done better, but in Perry's eyes, just getting freedom is what we wanted. So her way was the better way, but we see what the end result is of her better way. You know, eventually, and we'll get to the Joel and Ellie and Henry and Sam situation, but eventually they end up at that, area outside of town. They've set up a trap for the four people there, and Kathleen shows up with all her people, and they have the conversation. Kathleen has a conversation with Henry, and you know, Henry steps out to protect Sam, telling Ellie to run with Sam as soon as he steps out and moves towards Kathleen. They have a back and forth. Kathleen initially tells Sam, you know, I know why you did what you did. It was for Sam, or tells Henry rather, I know you did what you did. It was for Sam, but I don't care. Kids are supposed to die. Kids have, and there's something really powerful about this moment as well, because you're watching a woman. And what do we connect with women but maternity, caring for their children, loving their children, and what have you. So to hear her be so casual about the death of children and then berate Henry with an incredible lack of self-awareness, because she tells Henry, you think Sam, the whole world revolves around Sam. You think Sam's so important. Maybe Sam was supposed to die. This is the way it was supposed to go, without thinking herself about how Michael, she's making Michael be the thing that she revolves her world around. Remember when Perry comes and tells her about that, the earth moving underneath. Kathleen is the one that says it's her number seven priority. She could care less and don't tell anybody about it. So her obsession with finding the killer of her brother, or the one who turned her brother in, or turned on her brother and collaborated with Fedra, overwhelms her need to carry on the legacy of Michael and forgive Henry and move forward, right? She can't do that because she's so obsessed. So her calling out Henry for his obsession with protecting Sam is hypocritical on so many levels, but that's what makes her such a fascinating character, because a lot of people are obsessed, if you go all the way down to the micro level, which is Kathleen, or the macro level, which is, you know, like a leader of a country, people are obsessed with getting vengeance for their family or for their people or for their country. And that leads them to make mistakes. You know, a lot of people felt like George Bush going into or battling Saddam Hussein and finding an excuse to go in there was to make up for how his father didn't quite get the job done against Saddam Hussein, which might have cost him a second term as president. Also, the vengeance there, using an entire country's military to drum up lies about the weapons of mass destruction that Saddam Hussein had, just so he could go in there and finish the job that his father didn't finish, in order to, redeem his father's legacy, or the legacy of the name of Bush, you know? So we see that happening. And Kathleen, in a smaller level, is doing this here with her contingent of people there in Kansas City. She's leading them to do this, because in the back and forth with Henry there. And, you know, she's saying all these things, and Henry walks out, and she's almost, it's so funny. It's why you cast someone as great as Melanie Lynskey. When she sees Henry, she's almost just like, she gets emotional, because this is the last connection to Michael. And I think this is why you cast such a brilliant actress like Melanie Lynskey, is that she's bringing levels to these moments that you wouldn't anticipate an actor doing. And so when you see those moments, you're like, oh, wow, that makes her even more human, more three-dimensional, more real, and more of an interesting, complex character to consider and think about. Because, yes, you could, in a vacuum, be like, she was driven by vengeance and she wanted to kill these kids. She's an evil person. But then you throw in all the context of everything around her actions, just like you throw in the context of everything around Henry's actions. And Henry does say, I did a bad thing. I must be the bad guy. He knows what he did. And he had so much respect for Michael, and he knew what it would cost him to do this, to try to save Sam. So we see everyone having their reasons for the things that they're doing. The thing about this show that's so good, and I think it separates it from Walking Dead, and don't get me wrong, The Walking Dead walked so The Last of Us could run, is it does, it shows you some really bleak scenes and moments and storylines about humanity and about people, but it also shows you the hope. And I think the hope resonates more strongly in The Last of Us than it did for almost any season of The Walking Dead. And I don't mean to compare in a negative way, just saying The Walking Dead laid the framework, the blueprint, laid the groundwork. And I think The Last of Us is going to the next level with it. Like, kind of like you would look like Hill Street Blues laid the groundwork for like NYPD Blue and these other cop shows that came after it to have a little more depth to, and complexity to their characters and to their storylines, along with the cases that they're trying to solve. And so I see that here in Last of Us, that there's it's an evolution of what you would say about the zombie TV show, even though they're not zombies. I know they're fungal infected human beings. But you see that, right? And then when Kathleen, and then right at that moment, Kathleen, after she has her moment of emotion and connection with Henry, she's going to kill him. And she tells Henry that she's going to kill Sam and she's going to kill Ellie. And poor Joel can't do anything from there on high, because people are coming around the back to kill him. So he's got to kind of watch this helplessly. Yet again, Joel confronted with his inability at critical moments to protect the thing he loves, his daughter, Tess, and now again, Ellie. And so he's in this moment where he's confronted by that yet again, you know, and I think that's a really interesting thing and storyline that is kind of carrying through this these episodes here with Joel. And eventually it is, she, you know, Kathleen hears the sound, the ground opens up and all these infected come out. Holy shit. What a moment. I lost my absolute damn mind at that moment. I mean, I was screaming. Thank God Lady Outlaw was getting a haircut, because I was just going insane in the living room, at the speed and ferocity with which these things came out. Again, it's not like Walking Dead with a slow movement. It's almost like a World War Z combined with Walking Dead. They just come streaming out, just streaming out. And all the infected who had had their, essentially their freedom, for lack of a better term, taken away from them and pushed down in their boot of society on their throat, when they get the chance to break out, they break out and they kill everything in sight. And they make everyone pay for what happened to them, just like the hunters made the Fedra people and the collaborators pay for what happened to them. So it's sadly, in human society, it's a never-ending cycle. It's a never-ending cycle of these kinds of things. And of course, you saw the Fast X trailer. Jason Momoa's family was screwed over by Vin Diesel, by Dom in Fast and Furious 5. So now we got Fast 10. And that's also, it's a never-ending cycle. You never know whose family you're messing with, because you're protecting your family. It messes with other people's family or your people, and it messes with other people's people, and it becomes just a cycle here. But what a scene, what a moment. I mean, we haven't seen a lot of the infected. They've been really smart, almost like Spielberg with the Jaws shark. It's just coming at certain moments and certain times. It's more about connecting to these characters. It's more about having time with these characters, developing these relationships, fleshing out the world, seeing more of their interactions. And then boom, we get these infected coming out and doing all kinds of killings all over the place that are just as brutal as what we saw in the opening few minutes of the show. And then the bloater comes out. Good God almighty. And you know, that makes sense. What would happen to a massively strong dude who got infected? There are some of them who might become these massively strong versions of the infected here and become, I mean, the way he rips Perry's head off like it's no big deal as Kathleen runs, the way he throws everybody around, it's just so unsettling to see. And of course, it's perfect for a video game. You got to level up to the next creature that you have to fight off. And a bloater is, of course, a level up from above the simple infected. The clickers are a level above the simple infected. Then the bloaters are above the clickers. So you're seeing the levels here, just like a video game, but it's weaved organically and seamlessly into a live action show, which I think is fantastic to see here on many levels, you know, which I love to see. But I thought for sure she's not gonna outrun this bloater. Come on, you can't. There are certain things you have to kind of, you can't just suspend disbelief on certain things like that. She does get around the bloater, does get to, and then she confronts Henry and Sam and Ellie one more time. Joel is there watching it happen, and I'm looking at her, and she's got the gun pulled. And listen, I don't play the game, so I didn't know what happened initially with Henry and Sam. I know people said it was a tragic ending. People alluded to that on social media or whatever. And so I was like, is this it? Does she kill them, or does she kill Sam in front of Henry, or does she kill Henry in front of Sam? And Sam kind of goes on or gets lost. What happens here? But no, the teenage girl zombie who had been in the truck, the clicker who had been in the truck kind of messing with Elliot, almost killing Ellie, is the one that kills Kathleen. And we hit on this theme, right? And we see this in the show, in this particular episode, of children helping children, right? Sam and we'll talk about it a little bit more. Sam and Ellie really come together and connect over the comic books, connect over his drawings, can have conversations over that sketch, that sketch pad or whatever it's called. I haven't seen one of those in such a long time, but you know, they're connecting because she, you know, needs that connection with kids, needs that reminder of her life beforehand. And relishes the opportunity to connect with a younger person here, even though they're a little bit different in ages, they're at least connecting and have some of the same kind of stuff. So you're seeing really cool. But to have a young girl, a teenage, young teen or young adult female who was the clicker almost threatening her life and then saving her by killing Kathleen in such a brutal and vicious manner, it keeps this other storyline that's kind of been running through the first five episodes, the idea of children helping children, the innocence of that, you know, and so, and what gets lost with that as she witnesses more and more types of death. And we're, you know, we're keeping tabs on Ellie as she's seeing more and more of the world. Whereas Henry trains Sam to see the world and have some hope, you know, when he puts the superhero mask on him and he takes care of him, feeds him, tries to get him in the best position, you know, gets Joel and Ellie to help them escape or try to escape. He was teaching Sam a better version of the world, a world that, yes, there's madness, there's craziness. Just keep looking at me for now. So you don't want to see the horrors out there, but there's hope here. Whereas Joel is teaching Ellie that the practical approach to the world, the practical existence, and Ellie is gravitating to it. Ellie is accepting it more and more episode per episode. So I love seeing that here at the end with Kathleen. So let's move off Kathleen here. Let me take a quick break. Got 100 of you hanging out right now. Thank you so much. I appreciate it madly. You know, I've been talking straight for 24 minutes, so I'm going to take a sip, but I'm also going to take a quick break. And then we're going to jump into the Henry and Sam storyline and then the Joel and Ellie storyline. And then we'll head towards wrapping up this episode. If any of you want to send Streamlabs or Super Chats in, I will pull them up and talk about it, but I'm just having a live review and hanging out with you all. If you want to send anything, you can. It's in the description of the video. I can pin it in the chat as well. But I'm going to take a quick break first before we jump into any more of the stuff going on here in The Last of Us episode five. All right, I'm back, having a good time with you all. Thank you so much for hanging out with me. Please remember to subscribe to the channel. Hit the subscribe button down there. You know, we just crossed 25,600 subscribers. I know it's probably small for some people, but we're building, man. We're building. That's what we do, subscriber to subscriber. We are a grassroots situation. I don't get to glom on other channels that I've already built up. Got to do it all myself. So I appreciate you all. Whoever's watching and you haven't subscribed to the channel, would love it if you all did so. Hit that subscribe button, hit that bell button, hit a like on this video right now as well. And if you're watching later, please remember to leave a comment down below. What are your thoughts about all this as you watch the this review? Did I miss anything that you want me to keep a tab on? Because the Geek Buddies, we're going to review this thing on Monday. But unfortunately, Michael and Shannon were busy with a lot of things this weekend, so we couldn't find schedule, plus the Super Bowl this weekend. So we just couldn't find a time to line up to record the three of us. So we'll do it on Monday. And you'll get our thoughts combined in the back and forth with Michael and Shannon, which are always fun. I know a lot of you enjoy it as well. All right, well, let's deal with Henry and Sam. I mean, this is a fascinating. Well, let me see. Do I have anything? Yeah, Sober Smith said his poor dad almost had a heart attack when the infected came out of the ground. Me too, man. Me too. Me too. It was pretty crazy. I like this. Stein van Rijsbergen. I hope I'm saying that right, Stein. Kathleen had some real Dolores Umbridge of the Apocalypse vibe. Yeah, yeah, yeah. And that's why you cast two fantastic actresses. You know, you cast, I forget her name. She's so good in Harry Potter. And you cast Melanie Lynskey to play those kinds of characters because they feel so real and so scary real. And they almost have the kind of evil that you don't want to see in the real world, but you've seen in the real world as well. Honestly, with Henry and Sam, you know, we picked up from what happened the last episode with them pulling the guns on Joel and Ellie. There's a line there asleep. We pick up right, and we see more of the Henry and Sam story in the opening of the show. We see that, you know, Henry is hiding out. He's telling Sam about what they need to do here and where they need to go. They're meeting up with, who's the guy's name? Feldstein? Is that what his name was? I think it was Feldstein. That's who Kathleen finds out from one of the people in the cell that is hiding Sam. And apparently he has a house outside the perimeter, a bit of a safe house. And of course, it's the house that we saw Ellie and Joel walk into and see the cans there. It's the house we saw Kathleen and Perry walk into. Sorry about that. Where they saw the open cans and what have you. And Ellie knew immediately, or Kathleen knew immediately that was Sam's drawings and that was where Sam was. So she said, Henry can't be too far away because Sam was just here and this is all fresh. So we see the initial beginnings of how they end up in that attic, and that is through Feldstein. And we find out that they've got food for 11 days. On the 10th, we cut to the 10th day. And of course, Sam is scared and a little nervous. So Feldstein tells, right? Is it Feldstein? I hope I'm, yeah, there it is. Feldstein tells Henry to, you know, make Sam feel good, make Sam not feel afraid by not showing fear himself. So Henry kind of employs Sam to decorate the place and make it his own and feel better. It's a thing to distract him. And also to kind of keep him with the idea that there is hope, there's a possibility here of surviving this stuff. So it's really nice how that gets fleshed out. And I love the fact that we've got two really good actors here playing these roles of Sam and Henry and their interactions, right? I mean, this is what strikes me the most about their interactions throughout this episode is that each one of them has their role to play in their relationship here. And I want to give some love to the two actors here. Lamar Johnson is Henry, who I tweeted out. He is the absolute star of the episode. Although he's incredible from top to bottom, an incredible actor here. You need to be looking at him to lead your movie, lead your TV series, lead your superhero franchise. I know he was in X-Men Apocalypse or X-Men Dark Phoenix. For fuck's sake, he deserves better than either of those two movies. So somebody somewhere who's a damn good director and a damn good writer, find this kid a superhero movie to be a part of so you can make some money, but also all these great independent film directors, independent writers, get this kid to be in your movie because he is an incredible actor. I still haven't seen The Hate U Give, but after seeing him in this performance, I think I'm going to find my way over to The Hate U Give as well. And Kayvon Woodard, who is Sam here, who is deaf. He's in real life deaf, which I thought we've seen more and more actors coming through over the last couple of years, you know, with Eternals and other projects. We're seeing more and more actors, A Quiet Place. We're seeing more deaf actors take these prominent roles or have these storylines in shows. And Kayvon Woodard, I think, did a fantastic job as Sam. And that's different from the game. He's not deaf in the game. So in the behind-the-scenes feature right after the episode, Druckmann was talking about when Mazin approached him with this idea for making Sam deaf, and Druckmann said that he got so mad that he didn't think of it first and thought it was brilliant. So it was a great way to kind of update it and make it different yet same from the game. So I thought that was genius as well. But anyway, we see their interactions, and he's, of course, communicating with him and giving the, but Sam himself, like when Sam is hungry, the banging on the door, like the banging on the floor, the frustration, the anger, and he's the one that knows Fettelstein didn't, when he doesn't come back, that Fettelstein is dead. He knows it, right? He just needs his brother to confirm it. His brother's still trying to hide him from some of the horrors of the world, but Sam knows, right? And so they, as they're kind of figuring out what they're going to do, they got a plan here. They see what happens with Joel and Ellie from the last episode. Then Henry comes up with a new plan. They get the jump on Joel and Ellie there. And then there's an interaction and conversation about how to get out of the city. And in the game, Henry and Sam are just passing through. They don't have the same kind of connection to the Hunters. It's different. So when they're going into this situation with Joel and Ellie, there's much more depth going on here because we're connected to Kathleen and we're connected to Henry betraying Michael in order to save Sam. So we hear about that in these interactions with Joel and Ellie and with Henry and Sam as they're talking about how they're going to get out of the city. You know, Joel's initially hesitant. I love the interaction there when they initially get the jump on him where he is telling Joel, look, I don't want to shoot anybody. I don't want to kill anybody. I'm going to put my gun down. We just talk. And Joel is still in that voice of his that is to defend himself. And Ellie's like, for God's sakes, stop it. And he says, he just has an asshole voice. Please stop it. Great little moment of interaction as Ellie's getting to know Joel more and more. He's deaf or he's hard of hearing in his right ear. He's got this asshole voice that he uses in order to keep people at a distance. She's slowly breaking him down in her mind and understanding who he is and how to speak to him and how to interact with him and how to be a buffer for other people who are coming into Joel's hemisphere who may not know him. So I thought that was a really great little mini scene here that kind of speaks volumes about their strengthening bond and relationship. Anyway, we get to what happens with them. They have an interaction. I'm not going to go beat through beats. So they have the interaction talking about, how do we escape from the city? Henry convinces them that they can help and they're going to go under these tunnels. Joel's like, well, what do you need me for? And Henry said, because they shoved the infected down in the tunnels, I've been told it's clean, but just in case, I want you with me. And we hear more about Henry and Sam. We hear how Henry did what he did for the leukemia, to get the medicine for leukemia for Sam. And he knows he did a bad thing. He's a bad guy who, you know, because he must be a bad guy because he did the bad thing. And so you see that resonate with Henry. And again, Lamar Johnson doing a fantastic job giving so many levels to this guy that you really care about him. And even when he tells you and you hear about why he did what he did, because he does lie to Joel initially and tell him, hey, I didn't kill anybody. I've never killed anybody, blah, blah, blah. But in a way he has. So by turning Michael over. So you see that kind of resonate with him. And Joel and Henry are having these interactions as the protectors of their young wards with Ellie and Sam. Not that they don't have their own agency and stand on their own 2 feet and are three-dimensional characters, of course, but the protecting thing is there with Joel and Henry that I think is really nice to see. And it connects up to what Joel had in episode 3 with the letter from Henry, for the letter from Henry telling him, hey, you've got, Frank and Bill, him telling him, you know, we're protectors. We have to take care of the people we can take care of. And that's what we need to do. So we see that play out here in this, And see, now I'm going to beat myself up if I don't get it right. Cause it's been a few episodes since, it's been a couple episodes since that episode 3. So I don't want to get the wrong name here that he played in this series here, Nick Offerman played in this. Bill. Bill's the one that tells him, hey, we're protectors. We've got to protect the things we care about. Yeah, Bill and Frank. That's right, Bill and Frank. We got things we care about. And so we see that play out again with Joel and Henry, where they're both talking about the things that they did and the things, the way that they protect. You know, there's a line when they talk about the comic book thing, right? When they've gone through the shit, and we'll swing back to the shit that they go through. When they're sitting there and talking about endure and survive, and Joel says that it's repetitive, that it's the same thing, but it's not. And I think that's where I come to find such an interesting part of this show. What Joel wants to do is survive. What Henry wants to do is endure. And survive is just the bare minimum. Endure is to outlast. And I think that's the difference, right? And that's where Tess had to give Joel the mission to protect Ellie, because she wants essentially all the sins of the world that everybody did to survive in this world to be washed away so that we could go back to some semblance of normality or normalcy. And Ellie is the possible way to get there. So she tells him, you've got to protect her. Joel is about surviving to the next day for family, you know, for Tommy. It was for his daughter and then Tommy now. Whereas Henry saw hope and was giving that hope to Sam, he wants to endure, which means to live past. And that's the difference, I think. And so I found it funny that it was Joel saying endure and survive, saying it was repetitive, because in Joel's mind, they are the same thing, but they're actually not. And I love that you've got two people representing that. And I think the same thing with Kathleen and Michael. Michael is about enduring so we can come out the other side, forgiving people, you know, moving past it, understanding that this was an insane, extreme situation and people did things to survive that they would never normally do in the real world that you hope. And so that's enduring. Whereas Kathleen is about surviving, and that's immediate vengeance, immediately justice, immediately killing, immediately enacting our own rules, immediately. Henry and Michael are about enduring past it, which is hope, you know? And so I thought that was a really interesting difference between the two guys as we're seeing more and more of the way Joel does things and the way we saw Henry does things with Sam over the last two episodes. Anyway, we see more of their interactions here and their relationship with Henry and Sam, the love that they have for each other. But I love that Sam, again, is his own person. And I love that Henry understands what he's done for Sam. And he understands the conundrum and the emotional journey he's had to go on to come to terms, and the mental journey he's had to go on to come to terms with what he did. You know, the construction of this is so great in this episode as we build to this relationship, you know, as we flesh out this relationship. And remember, we just met them at the tail end of the last episode. But I guarantee most of you who are watching, by the middle part of this episode, you are so invested in Henry and Sam. And that's, of course, because of the two performances, but also the writing and the way they construct this episode by starting in Kansas City after the Fedra have been overthrown. Henry is on the run because he's turned on Michael to give medicine to his son, his brother, and Kathleen is after them. So we see immediately, we understand that Sam would have done this, or Henry would have done this for Sam, and we know why, because a lot of us have family members that we might turn someone in order to hope they survive. That's just the natural instinct of human beings, is to protect their own. Fuck, man, the entire Marvel situation happens between Iron Man and Captain America because Captain America can't let go of how much he loves Bucky and wants Bucky back as his best friend. It causes fractures upon fractures in the Avengers world, and that resonates throughout. And it's still resonating throughout through Falcon and Winter Soldier, and I'm sure it'll resonate in Captain America 4, A New World Order. So you're seeing that idea of family or friends, like sacrificing or breaking the rules for them, and how that affects people around you, right? So you're seeing that here with Henry and Sam. And then we get to, of course, that heartbreaking scene with Henry and Sam at the end there, where Sam has been bit, because as they were fighting off the infected, you saw Henry and Sam underneath the car, and two of those clickers, two of the infected were right there to try and get to Sam and trying to get to Henry. And we find out that they did, even though Ellie saved them by using her trusty knife, which, remember, she used in that convenience store, in the basement of that convenience store, and killing that affected person. She kills the two, and she knows exactly where to stab. That's a little bit of a hint as well for Ellie. She knows exactly where to stab to kill these infected. So that's just a little bit of character work for her to know that. For us as the audience, she has clearly done this before or been taught to do this before. We find out, of course, earlier that Fedra, in the last episode, I think Fedra had taught her how to hold a gun or whatever. So we see she's got a little more training than Joel might think. So anyway, we find out that Sam has been, and just a beautiful interaction. Again, Ellie and Sam connecting over the comic books, connecting over the jokes initially when they're in that conference room talking about the plans to get out. It's really sweet. They're connecting scenes, right? Because you understand Ellie's starved for common age interaction because she's been around a grumpy old dude for a while now, and she wants the common interaction. She relishes it. And Sam himself, you know, even Henry says, oh, I haven't heard Sam laugh like that in a very, very long time. So you're seeing this beautiful relationship between them develop. They have conversations. They're down when we get to that kind of classroom that's down at the basement. Their interactions there, them playing soccer with the, you know, with the goal and everything, seeing all this kind of painted out as they're waiting. So we're seeing them being kids again, right? And this is really important. One of the charities I love to be a part of is Camp Kasem. Camp Kasem is a charity for kids whose parents have cancer or whose parents have died of cancer. And they set up these camps every summer so people can go, kids can go, just kids. And you have to have had a parent or parents who had cancer, and it teaches them to be kids again and to remind them that they are kids and they can enjoy life and kind of they are in pain, they are suffering, but there's also joy to be found. There's also hope to be found in the world. And I felt a little of that as I was watching this scene, these scenes here with Sam and Ellie connecting, what have you. So it all leads to, you know, at the end there when they're in that house, and it's very similar to how it's constructed in the game in terms of the design of the house. So I thought it was really nice. I'm sure people watch the game were like, oh shit, here it is. This is where it happens. How are they going to do it? And, you know, we have a beautiful back and forth yet again with Ellie and Sam talking about what they're scared of. She says scorpions, and she actually says she's afraid of being alone. And he then reveals, you know, are you still the same person inside if you become a monster? Or if you become a monster, are you still the same person inside? Which, I tell you this, man, I had to stop the show right at that, reading that line, because I knew what was coming, and I just started crying. I just started crying because I really grew to care about both of these characters, and Kayvon Woodard's performance here as Sam was just so no perfect. He was his own person. He wasn't just someone that Henry was taking care of, you know, as kind of an attachment to the character of Henry. He had his own life. He had his own desires, his own interests, his own kind of just fleshed out existence in this world. So when he asked Ellie that, I was like, ah, fuck. And so when he lifted his leg and showed the bite, I just was so devastated, man. Absolutely devastated. And Ellie just, because of course, as tough as Ellie is, as smart as Ellie is, as much of a smartass and can handle herself in the world, she's not knowledgeable about the scientific stuff. She's not knowledgeable about what this might take. In a child's mind or a teen, young teen's mind, the idea that, oh, my blood is clean, therefore, if I put some of my blood on you, it'll cure you. Goes to sleep, wakes up. Sam is sitting on the edge of the bed. And you knew what was coming, right? I mean, just a single solid. For those of you who haven't played the game, you could still tell, and you knew what was coming. Sitting on the edge of the bed by himself, looking out in that silhouette. And when she touches his shoulder and he turns and just attacks her, and they go through the door. And Henry, initially Joel wants to stop it. Henry shoots the ground again to stop Joel. And you get this sense of like, oh, what's going to happen here? How are they going to stop this? If you haven't played the game. And then Henry takes it upon himself to shoot Sam, which was so, I mean, just shocking. As if the fucking infected coming out of the ground wasn't shocking enough, this moment shocked the shit out of me, man, because we don't see kids get killed like this on TV. It just doesn't happen in shows and series. It doesn't happen. And to see this moment, I mean, I'm going to get emotional talking about it right now because it was so powerful. Henry was not going to let Joel, who had shown the tendency to kill things and people and infected. Remember back at the beginning of the episode, we see Henry see Joel kill human beings without, you know, to survive, to protect Ellie. Why wouldn't he kill his brother to protect Ellie? So in that moment, I think all those thoughts come rushing to Henry's head. Henry sees what's become of Sam in that moment. And reflexively, because he's grown to care for Ellie, and maybe even him wanting to do it himself, and maybe even a way down below, a little level of guilt that he sacrificed Michael for Sam, he's the one that's going to take out Sam. It ain't going to be Kathleen. It's not going to be Michael. It's sure as fuck ain't going to be Joel. And it ain't going to be Ellie. It's going to be him. And in that moment, he takes the shot. And it is so heart-stopping and devastating. And here is where the acting comes through in ways that I did not anticipate from Lamar Johnson. He processes what he did, because in that moment, all those thoughts come rushing through and he makes a split decision. And he's been trained to make a split decision because of this world and what he's had to do in a split moment in order to survive in this world. So in that moment, he shoots his own brother. And then it dawns on him what he did. And that's the acting. This entire scene is a masterclass in acting from Lamar. What he processes, what he goes through, and then when he realizes what he's done, the weight of it all, and understanding that he's taken his brother out, understanding that all he suffered and sacrificed, the death of Michael, everything now, Kathleen telling him in their last interaction, kids die all the time, it doesn't matter, that's the world. And here it is, she was right. Did what he do matter because Sam only lived a few days longer? And in the end, he ended up killing his brother anyway. So he was going to die of leukemia. He was going to die of leukemia anyway. He died anyway. And Michael could have lived and maybe there would have been a better transition. So there's so much to process in that moment. But at the surface, it is, of course, I've killed my brother. The last thing I care about in this world. And I loved him so much, and I was supposed to protect him, and I couldn't protect him. Why didn't I check him? Why didn't I see if he had bites? And I killed him. And as his blood spills out onto the floor slowly, we see Lamar Johnson break down. And the breakdown is so good. I mean, I'm so emotional thinking about it because it's so believable. It's so good. So that when he turns the gun on himself, I challenge anybody who's watching me right now who didn't scream just like Joel screamed in that moment with a no. Like, no, you know, reflexively. And it's devastating, just devastating. And seeing Joel's reaction to it. And you got to ask yourself, I saw this in a review, which I thought was a really great review. I can't remember if it was IGN or IndieWire asking the question, did Joel reflexively want to stop Henry from killing himself because of his care for Henry or because he is reconnected back to humanity because of the way that Ellie is slowly getting through to his walls? Is this something Joel would do anyway? Because I have a feeling Joel before Ellie isn't as bothered by Henry killing himself in that moment. But Joel now, after been through these, and remember, Joel asked Sam and Henry to come with him. That is a huge moment. This is a guy who was very solitary for 20 years, didn't let anybody close but Tess and Tommy, and did all kinds of shit so that he could stay alive, survive, not endure, survive, and be separate from everybody else. And in this moment, he wants to save Henry from himself. And that's huge. I don't think Joel before Ellie would have done that. Maybe even Joel before Tess wouldn't have done that. And so that's an interesting character moment for Joel. But for Henry, it is, for us, soul-shattering. Just absolutely soul-shattering. All of this that they endured, all the stuff that happened, and in the end, it is this bite. And just like he couldn't stop the leukemia coming, poor Sam couldn't stop the bite and what was going to happen to his body, you know? And it was just shattering to see that happen. And we cut to them being buried, you know, or they've been buried by Joel there as he's finishing up burying their bodies. And, you know, Ellie is absolutely just like processing this as well. In the moment after Sam is shot and then Henry kills himself, because her reaction to Henry, like, she is getting such an education of the outside world. The sarcastic, smart-ass young teen who thought she knew the world and everything like that, she is getting a very brutal, harsh, and how can I say this? Unprotected view of the world, and is having to process that. And seeing these two who she had grown to care about, both Sam and Henry, die right in front of her by Henry's hand is almost too much, right? But because Joel has been teaching her to not show emotion, to hold that emotion, just like when she killed or shot the dude that was choking Joel in the last episode, she held it, like she let a tear and then she held it together. Didn't want to show too much. The same thing here. Joel buries them. She comes up, doesn't say a eulogy, doesn't say a word, just leaves the notepad that they had an exchange about with "I'm sorry" on there. And I'm sorry for a number of things. That my blood didn't work, so I couldn't save you. And that this all went down the way it did. And also that the world is the way it is. That innocent young boys like Sam can be taken in such brutal ways because of what is happening in the world. So it just, there's so much weight to it, you know? And of course for Joel, again, watching a protector be unable to save the person he was supposed to protect and take himself out, there's resonance with that for Joel as he's processing that. And I guess we should switch to Joel and Ellie here for a few minutes and then we'll wrap up this review because I don't want to go too long, but the Joel and Ellie storyline here works really well as they navigate and get stronger throughout this episode. It is mostly focused on Henry and Sam for sure, and Kathleen trying to get her vengeance. But we see slow, as I mentioned earlier, we see their bond developing as Ellie is calling out Joel's asshole voice. And then later when Ellie and Joel are having conversations about helping, and then certainly when Joel and Ellie are being attacked by the old dude in the house who has got terrible aim but shooting around them, there's that moment where Joel tells Ellie, "Look, I'm going to go around the back and I'm going to take care of this." And she's like, "No, you know, we'll go together." And he's like, "Don't you trust me?" And that's a really powerful moment when he says to her, "Don't you trust me?" Because there's something really strong there that he is connecting to. And their relationship is developing. And you think about that moment because Ellie does trust him and Ellie does let him go because she is beginning to trust him. She's beginning to understand that he cares for her. And of course, earlier in the episode, think of that moment. And let's go back to that moment where they're walking into the tunnels for the first time and they're looking around there with the flashlight. Great tension there as well. But when I think it's Henry says, you know, like your dad, and they both respond quickly, "I'm not her dad and he's not my dad." So right at the same time, they both respond back to Henry in a way to shut that shit down because they're not ready yet, either one, to admit that they're developing affection for each other, a connection for each other, and feelings for each other. And it's because it's for a number of reasons, but also because Joel has been like teaching her or showing her the ugly parts of the world and showing her how to not show emotion, how to keep it in, how to be quote unquote strong, how to kind of be able to survive, not endure, survive these moments so that she can stay alive for another day. They're slowly becoming, in essence, father and daughter. You know, we don't know yet what her backstory is. Did she have a dad, not a dad? What's the deal here? But we know Joel's backstory. So that gets developed. So I like that we went from, "He's not my dad," to at the near the end there, him saying, "Don't you trust me?" You know, and so we see this relationship develop throughout this episode, even though we're focusing more, or strengthen rather, and get more connected, even though we're focusing more on Henry and Sam, and we're focusing on Kathleen. So I think it's really well done, and I like the performances yet again. I mean, I love what Bella Ramsey is doing. It's real subtle that she's softening the edges of Ellie. I don't know if you guys noticed that, but you're seeing her just in these interactions, even when she's saying the asshole voice about Joel, and she is doing it from a place of care. And even when he like won't let go of the asshole voice, she's like, "Come on, man." Like, she's really trying to get him to understand. And I think Joel seeing her, you know, play with Sam, play with the comic books, laugh and giggle with Sam over those terrible jokes that he was laughing about earlier, you're sensing that he's starting to really care about her and what she represents. And remember what Kathleen said in the episode. Do your whole world revolved around Sam, just like Kathleen's whole world she was unaware of or didn't want to face revolved around Michael? Is Ellie the one that the whole world is supposed to revolve around, because she is, or she carries within her the ability to change this all around, right? And I think Ellie is a very interesting thing to follow in this episode as well, because we see her, as I said, interacting with Sam multiple times, going back to being a kid again, remembering being a kid again. But we also see her seeing these deaths and then realizing that she can't help Sam just by putting blood on it, that it's going to take more. And so I think what we're going to see is this turn starting in the next episode where Ellie is going to take a much more active approach in keeping herself alive, in understanding the importance she may carry to the world, right? This is really important, because when the things that are great about great shows is that you see character arcs in their main characters. And with Ellie, we're slowly seeing her understand her importance. And this was her first attempt to use her own blood to save someone else, and it didn't work. And I'm sure Joel's going to have to tell her about, you know, the scientific stuff that has to happen for it to be possible, for it to be a serum inside her blood. And this is where we start to see Ellie might be seeing that she can change the world if she stays alive. She can fix the world if she stays alive. And I don't mean that it'll become like an arrogant, self-serving way. I mean in that she'll take more of a harder approach, a more stronger approach, and a little bit less of a playful approach to understanding the importance of what she represents in the world. In essence, growing up, you know, she's not going to lose her sarcasm, her wit, her ability to stand her ground. But I think she's going to really understand the weight of what she carries inside of her. And I think that's going to be very interesting to see over the next few episodes, for sure. I do want to give a lot of props as we wrap up here. And I'll hit your Streamlabs and Super Chats as well. I don't know if anybody, I didn't even check if anybody, I saw some Super Chats, so I will definitely look at those. I don't know if anybody sent any Streamlabs, which I probably I don't think I put the thing in there. So I don't know if anybody sent any Streamlabs, but if you did, I will absolutely read them. I'll actually bring it up now. But the one thing I want to end on is the construction of the episode, right? I mean, something we were talking about, Steve Morris and I on the Cinephiles, about what's the word I'm looking for? About the idea of flashbacks. Tarantino says Reservoir Dogs doesn't have flashbacks, because flashbacks is the main character remembering something that happened, or a character thinking about something that happened in the past and then flashing back to that. He tells his stories out of order, and that's what's happening here. We're telling the stories a little bit out of order, not a lot out of order, just a little bit. And so starting out with Kansas City, just a few days before Joel arrives, we don't see all the time that Fedra has been in charge of Kansas City. We're just starting a few days before Joel arrives. So we have a little more of a perspective, a little more context to put all these actions in. And then boom, we're seeing the Joel situation happen from Sam and Henry's point of view, really Henry's point of view, because he's not letting Sam look. So we're seeing that. And then we're hearing about Kathleen, and we're hearing about Michael. We never see Michael. We just hear about what Michael represented, that this possibility was there, and that he was killed off, or that he was betrayed rather, before he could turn things around and hopefully lead a peaceful resistance that would overturn the federal control in Kansas City. We don't see that. So all of that is constructed for us to create our minds who we want Michael to be, who we think Michael is. But we see how this thing gets paced out, and we see the moments of tension in the tunnels. And then we see Kathleen having this moment with Perry that adds more chilling resonance to her actions. She is determined. She will become the thing that she beheld. She will be even more cruel than Fedra, because Fedra put things in motion. And look, Henry says they raped and tortured and murdered people for 20 years, which human beings will absolutely do if something like this happens. 1,000,000%. But there will be those people who will lead people who are better than the people who are in charge. That always happens as well, as a counterbalance to the evil, always. So we are seeing the construction of this and what Kathleen represents, which is this megalomania run wild. She's also a protector. And we're seeing the different types of protectors. Michael's protection is much more civil and understanding. It takes time. Just like Martin Luther King, it took time. It takes time to turn things around in the country, in the world, right? And of course, I remember the James Baldwin quote, so I get it. It's taken, you know, my grandfather's time, my grandma's time, my aunt's time, my cousin's time, my niece's time. How much more time do you need? I totally understand that. But it does take time to turn things around in a peaceful way. And it's not always easy, but it does happen. It happened for Gandhi. It happened for MLK. It happened for other people who've used different methods. You could argue the results in the end and if we're going backwards or not, but it takes time. So the protectors all have their way of doing things. Kathleen's protection is much more brutal and violent. The Fedra's protection is out of necessity because they're just military rule. And yes, they will implement horrible things for sure. But it's more about, for them, keeping the trains running on time. Whereas for Kathleen, it's about enacting vengeance and justice. Joel, as we said, is a different kind of protector because he's trying to instill the lessons into Ellie so she can carry them on and survive. And Henry is about teaching his son to have, or his brother rather, to have hope and to endure and have hope. So there's different forms of protectors going through, and the way they construct that in this episode, and we see the way they implement their ways of doing things are really powerful. And we end with that note of Joel and Ellie, where Ellie doesn't say a word to Joel or says, which way is west rather, and just starts walking. And Joel catches up and he is teaching her how to put that stuff down and move forward and survive. And so that's the protector that endures and survives out of all the stuff that happened in this episode. And I thought it was really well done. I mean, the writing was fantastic. The direction was so well done. And again, that scene of all those infected coming out of the earth, that is a fucking scary scene. That was better than anything you saw in World War Z, for God's sakes. So it was incredible to see that being played out. So shout out to Craig Mazin and Neil Druckmann for the incredible job they did on this episode. And who directed this episode? Jeremy Webb, who also did the last episode. So just incredible stuff from everybody all around. Let me hit some super chats. But as I'm heading towards the wrap up here, please make sure you subscribe to the channel down below. Hit that subscribe button. Hit that bell button so you see when we're dropping all the content we do here on the Outlaw Nation. I would appreciate it madly. Remember, the Geek Buddies is here on the Outlaw Nation. So if you love the Geek Buddies, subscribe to the channel as well. That's how you get access to all the content. Or get the notification that we're dropping some new Geek Buddy stuff. We will be back on Monday to review it, and I'll drop that as well. But please hit a like as well, and leave a comment if you're watching later. Would appreciate that as well. And don't forget, the Geek Buddies and the Outlaw Nation have their own podcast stream, so if you want to subscribe to that as well, in case you want to listen to this again, you can do that on the podcast. So let me hit some of these. I think it was a couple of super chats that came through here. IM2FlyCam said, a painful episode. I have a cousin younger than me who is deaf, cried for a good 10 minutes near the end. Yeah, brother. They really, the way they constructed Sam's storyline as well throughout this episode. By the way, this is the only time we get with Sam. So that should tell you how well they built this episode, both direction-wise, writing-wise, performance-wise, and overall storyline-wise, to lead to that moment and devastate you the way they did. I have to fly cam, and a lot of us who are watching were devastated by that as well. Stellar Justin Lopez says, the ending was the saddest thing I've ever seen in my life. It's almost been a full 20 hours, and I'm 24 hours, and I'm still in my feels. I feel you, brother, 100%. 100%. One of the most devastating endings to any episode of television ever, because you cared so much about, you know, these characters. And again, I'm going to reiterate this. Great television understands how to use its characters. We only got really one full episode with Henry and Sam. We only see them for a few seconds at the end of the last episode. And we get this whole life. We feel like we've lived a whole season with them in one episode. And again, that speaks volumes about what Craig Mazin and Neil Druckmann have created with this show. And it speaks volumes to the incredible performances from Lamar Johnson and Kevin Woodard. And of course, I've already spoke glowingly about Melanie Lynskey, but also Bella Ramsey doing a wonderful job here. And of course, Pedro Pascal, who's a little bit of a, takes a little bit of backseat for most of the episode, but you know, still does a wonderful performance, still does a good, strong performance. He's even like, even in the moments with him and Joel down in that preschool or whatever, that classroom, he is opening up a little bit to Henry. He is saying to Henry, like, hey, you know, I get why you did what you did. If that was my kid, you know, blah, blah, blah. And Henry's like, yeah, but, you know, did I do the right thing? I'm a bad guy. So, you know, Joel was opening up and then Henry shut it down. And we see Joel's like, oh, yeah, that's right. You know, I can't care. I can't connect too much. So Joel has a good heart. He's just been trained by himself to stay alive, to keep people at a distance. And when the heart opens up a little bit, he gets reminded by some people why he has to go behind the wall, and by other people like Tess, or by what we're seeing with Ellie, that he has to get beyond those walls in order to make the human connections, which I think is going to be a great thing to see when he has his breakdown. I'm telling you right now, there's no way we're not heading to a Pedro Pascal absolute earth-shattering breakdown where all the shit that he's been holding on to comes pouring out of him, kind of like the infected came pouring out of the ground. That's all going to come pouring out of him at some point, I think, by the end of the season, which is going to be an incredible moment to witness and may lead to this thing being nominated for Emmys all over the place and awards all over the place as well. All right, there we go. That's it for me. Thank you all so much for joining me. I appreciate you all's hanging out with me and having some fun talking about this episode. Yeah, we're over an hour, so I should get out of here. Thank you to the 120 of you who are watching me for a majority of the episode. I appreciate it badly. Hit a like on this video, as I said, share it on your social media, subscribe to the channel, leave a comment down below, and let me know if I've missed anything that we didn't talk about, if I glossed over anything, any themes, anything like that, let me know for sure. You know, if you're into pro wrestling, I'm going to go live at 3 p.m. PT over on the Strong Style channel, talk about the world of wrestling. I need to talk about other things so I don't dwell on this episode too much and get too emotional for sure, but I can't thank you all enough for hanging out with me today. This impromptu review, I love you all madly. Take care of yourselves, and we still got four more episodes to go, so keep it together, and I'll talk to you next time with another brand new review episode or show here on the Outlaw Nation. Much love, take care, bye.